Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Why Do You Call Me Lord, Lord? Right after this. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question, and it says, "By what way is it that the light is parted?" Or if we paraphrase that, it would say, "By what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated?" Now imagine asking that question 4,000 years ago. Today, of course, it's relatively simple. And the student answers, well, by passing it through the prism of the spectroscope. But who could have known anything about a spectroscope 4,000 years ago back in Job's day? Now, when we heat a metal red hot, or we heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays of light, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on the graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star, all we have to do is pass it through the spectroscope to see what the composition of that star is and the proportion of each of its ingredients. And this division of light rays is always constant. It doesn't vary in the least particular, so that you and I today can always rely upon these results. Spectroscopic analysis is an exact science. And this is the manner by which the light is apportioned or separated. Now, you know, that places us in a quandary, because either Job knew that, or we're looking at a supernatural wisdom that's being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one more of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that we teach here in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. It's free. It's a 4-hour commentary. It's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a general law CD. It's educational, informative, and entertaining. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Then click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. If you don't have a computer, give us a call and we'll send you one. But if you've got a computer, you can download it yourself. Hey, we've been talking about a scripture where Jesus asks a question. He said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not those things which I say?" He one time had a conversation with some Pharisees. And he was invited by them. They wanted him to come over to dinner, and so he did. He came over to dinner. It's in Matthew 15, and here's the story. It says, "Then came to Jesus scribes and Pharisees, which were in Jerusalem, saying, Well, why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? Because they wash not their hands when they eat bread." Now picture this. It's like a 5-year-old kid comes in and Aunt Bessie asks, "Did you wash your hands, little Georgie, before you sat down at the table?" And then I'd have to say, "Well, no, I didn't." "Well, you get right into the bathroom right now and wash your hands." I was a dirty little kid. You know, when I was 5 years old, I didn't wash my hands. And that's what the Pharisees are asking Jesus here. He says, "Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders?" So Jesus answered, and he said to them, "Well, why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition?" And that's the subject matter of this week's inquiry. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, but you don't do those things which I say, those things that I instruct? And he asked the Pharisees the same thing. Well, okay, you guys buckle your seatbelts, drive 55, and you have marriage licenses. That's great. But how come you guys are over here violating the law of God with your insurance, public school, paper money, limited liability, income tax, Halloween, and Christmas? How come you're doing that? And people do that to this day. I mean, if you were to take a look at the average Joe Sixpack Christian, he's got insurance on his house. He practices limited liability. He has a checking account and credit cards. He doesn't practice just weights and balances, sends his kids to public school, pays his income tax. He doesn't tithe. He practices Halloween, Christmas, and all of the secular holidays. He does not practice Passover, Feast of Tabernacles, and doesn't keep the Sabbath. Goes to church, knocks on your door, and asks you, "What in the hell you're doing here? How come you're not doing all these things that we're doing?" Jesus asked these religious people the same thing. He says, "What the hell are you talking about?" Listen to it again. He answered and said, "Why do you also transgress the commandments of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, 'Honor your father and mother,' and 'He that curses father or mother, let him die the death.' But you people say, 'Whosoever shall say of his mother or father, it's a gift, by whatsoever you might be profited by me, and honor not his father or his mother, he shall be free.' Thus have you made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition." So here's the Pharisees. We have a commandment that says, honor your father and mother. They don't practice it, but they wash their hands before they sit down to eat. And so when Jesus came in, they asked him, "How come you guys don't wash your hands when you come in to sit down?" He says, "Well, how come you guys are over here dishonoring your parents and violating a law that has a capital felony attached to it?" That's what I'm asking you people this week. How come you do that? Now, it's one thing if you send your kid to public school because you believe in evolution and you believe that the educational system in public school is better than the scripture. There's people that believe that. And that makes all the sense in the world. I can understand full well why some guy would send his kid to public school to teach him evolution rather than special creation if, in fact, he's an evolutionist. Makes all the sense in the world. What doesn't make any sense is for some guy that's knocking on my door and asking me how come I ain't going to church or why I'm not doing this, that, or something else, or trying to get me to join his church, and sends his kids to public school to teach him evolution when the scripture plainly teaches special creation. Now, does he teach his children special creation and then sends his children to school so that they can brainwash them with evolution? I mean, does that make any sense? Would you people, think about this now for a minute, would you conservative people out there, would you educate your children to conservative philosophy and then send your kid to some communist socialist school so that they can brainwash your kid with more socialist propaganda? Or vice versa, for that matter. Yeah, that's the question. Think about that. We say one thing, and then we do another. Isn't that hypocrisy? Isn't that what we're talking about here when we talk about hypocrites? They say one thing, and then they go out and do something else. There's a cute ad on advertising Chantix on television on the news at night. This lady is advertising for some pharmaceutical company, and she's a smoker, see? And she says to her 8-year-old kid, she said, "I told him, now, Donnie, whatever you do, don't smoke." Here's this lady, she's puffing away, smoking. She's telling her 8-year-old kid, "Donnie, don't smoke." And so the little kid says, "Well, Mommy, why don't you quit?" That makes all the sense in the world. You know, that's where wisdom comes from, the mouth of babes. And so the lady said, "Well, then I knew I had to quit, and so I got Chantix, and thank God for Eli Lilly or whoever's making it, and blah, blah, blah." But, you know, for somebody to be smoking and then telling somebody else not to smoke, that's just hypocrisy. It's nuts. That's where we suffer from the terminal stupids. So Jesus was asking these guys, well, wait a minute, you're over here pointing out something that isn't worth, you know, two hoots and a whirlwind, and then you're saying to me, I'm not going to follow the laws of God. I'm not going to practice this fifth commandment, but I'm going to wash my hands when I sit down to eat. Reminds me, you go to a restaurant, and Baptists, you know, they're pretty religious people, so they sit down and they pray in the restaurant. You ever see that? I live down here in the Bible Belt, see it all the time. And so you're sitting there, you know, eating, and some guy comes in with his wife and kids, and they sit down and they all bow their heads, and then they're praying. And I'm not finding fault with it. I'm just saying, you know, these are religious people. You can see by the way they behave. Then they get up and they go serve themselves. They come back and they sit there eating ham. They've prayed over this. Here's this guy. I thank God that I have something to eat. Now I'm going to go eat this unclean food that Jesus told me not to eat. Can you believe this? And they think that that's pretty normal. But I've got to ask the question, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Now listen to what Jesus said. He said, you hypocrites. He called them hypocrites. He called them other things too. But he said, you hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people draws nigh to me with their mouth, and they honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. And that's my point this week. The religious people are hypocrites. They draw nigh unto God with their mouth, and they honor God with their lips. Oh, I just love Jesus. Don't you love Jesus? Do you have Jesus in your heart today? And then they go out and eat pig. Or they practice the Sabbath on Sunday. Or they practice Halloween and worship witches and witchcraft. Or they don't practice the Passover or the Feast of Tabernacles. They practice Christmas. They practice Easter, which they were told not to do. Remember, a little earlier, we took a look at Jeremiah 10. Learn not the way of the heathen, so we go out and learn how to practice Halloween. Learn not the way of the heathen. Don't go cut a tree out of the woods, and so we go cut a tree out of the woods, and we celebrate Christmas, which we were told not to do. And so that's the gist of the argument that I'm making, that religious people are, in fact, hypocrites. And so they can't very well set a good example for the non-religious people in the community, can they? And then when you tell them this, they get kind of upset and they say, but that's Jewish. And they get a kind of a sneer on their face, like, well, what if the Jews did one thing right once in a while by keeping the Passover or the Feast of Tabernacles or the Sabbath? Or, you know, why shouldn't we do that which God has commanded us to do? I mean, hell, even the Pope might do something that's scriptural. If a Catholic does something that's scriptural, they're opposed to abortion. Abortion is called passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. It's against the law to pass your seed through the fire to Moloch. Abortion is a criminal act. It's a criminal act punishable by death. It's a capital felony. Well, then, why would we throw rocks at Catholics because they're practicing that one law of the Scripture? You know, practicing one law of the Scripture is better than none. It would help a great deal if Catholics would practice two laws of the Scripture, or even 3, 9, 16, or 27, or maybe all 759 of them. But, you know, the more you practice, the better. Now let's take a look at another little section over here, not to belabor the issue forever, but listen to this. In Leviticus 18, verses 1 through 5, there's a statement made in here, and religious people like to brag about and show that they're very law-abiding people. And they will... I can remember one time I was in jail, and there was a lady And she was kind of like that Peter Pan story, you know, where she was kind of prancing through. She was a little overweight, number one. Hell, she was just plain fat, come to think of it. But moral of the story was she was wearing high heels. And when she walked past my cell, I said, "Well, good morning." And she looked at me in absolute horror. Here was a convict. Here was a criminal. Here's some guy locked up behind bars addressing her. And she not only didn't answer, which was just plain rude. I mean, you know, even if I was, you know, Al Capone, for crying out loud, wouldn't you at least say, "Well, good morning. Good to see you." I would, just to be courteous, you know, with anybody, but she wasn't. And then when she came back through, she was with a group, I don't know, with the Ladies Flower Society or something, I don't know. They came through the jail and they were getting a tour, and they were looking at all of us evil, wicked people locked up in there. And I thought about that. I said, "Well, didn't you know that Jesus was a criminal executed for treason? You know, hey, didn't you know your hero, your champion was a criminal, a convict? Didn't you know that the Apostle Paul and Peter and James and John all spent time in the slammer? They threw Elijah into a slime pit, threw him in the dungeon. Had him locked up, you know, for a couple of years. Threw Ezekiel into a concentration camp, you know, and spent a little time in jail. I'm not sure that people going to jail are necessarily evil and wicked. But anyway, I've always remembered that lady. She was kind of a surprise. But she's pretty typical. Religious people are like that in general. They really loathe crime and criminality. And they like to show off that they're in obedience to all of the laws. But did you know that some of the laws that are enacted by government violate the law of the scripture? For instance, your state government licenses the meatpacking industry to put 30% fat into your hamburger and sell that to you. But that's a criminal activity. You see, God told us you shall eat no manner of fat. And so there's one criminal act licensed by government. And then there's another one here called the census. Did you know it's against the law to number Israel? It's against the law for you to give out this information and let them number you. And yet, I think that all the Christians line up to get numbered, don't they? And then, did you know that the scripture says that you're to practice strict liability and not limited liability? But don't all these Christians run out and get social security numbers and to buy health insurance and life insurance and et cetera? Insurance is limited liability, and limited liability is a crime. Now, it doesn't violate the law of California, but it violates the law of the God of the Bible. It doesn't violate the standards of your church or the doctrines of your theology. I agree with that. I'm sitting here, yeah, I can see that. My point is that has anybody ever thought to look into the Bible to find out, well, what did God think about that? I haven't seen any religious people doing it. Boy, that's rare that you see that going on. Now listen, here in Leviticus 18, verses 1 through 5. "Then the Eternal spoke unto Moses, and he said, You speak unto the children of Israel, and you say unto them, I am the Eternal your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein you dwelt, shall you not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall you not do, and neither shall you walk in their ordinances." Now, here's God. He's got these people. They're out of Egypt now. See, he's got them out here in the wilderness. This is the book of Leviticus. Moses wrote five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. They're out here in the wilderness, and he says, now, you remember when you were back in Egypt, there was Egyptian law. And he says, now, I don't want you people to practice that Egyptian law. Don't you bring their banking regulations under Title 31 out here and pollute yourselves with that kind of law, don't you bring their traffic standards and statutes and ordinances out here? Don't you bring their insurance law out here? And he goes on in verse 4 and he says, you shall do my judgments, and you shall keep my ordinances, and you shall walk therein, because I'm the eternal your God. You shall therefore keep my statutes, keep my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the eternal. So here's the God of the Bible. Here's the God of Moses, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Here's the God that the Christians are all claiming to follow. Jesus, you know, this is Jesus that's given these instructions here. Called Melchizedek in Genesis. In John 1, verse 1, he's called the Word. And then he says, now, I don't want you to practice the law of California, Washington, Oregon, and Nevada. I want you to practice my law. I don't see people out there doing that. Now, this last cycle, they had a census. This census program comes up every 10 years here in the United States. And they want to come and knock on your door, and they want you to identify yourself and how many people live here and one thing and another. So I tell them, well, thank you very much, but I don't want to participate in the program. And you know what they tell me? Every time, without fail. You have to. It's the law. Every census worker is evidently trained. You have to. It's the law. And every single time they do that, I say, can you tell me where that law is located so I can look it up? And I've been doing this now for four cycles, 80, 90, 2000, and 2010. Four cycles over a period of 30 years. And not one census worker has been able to tell me where the law is that requires me to participate in the census. They all tell me it's the law, but when you ask them, where is it? I have to find out from my supervisor. Would you please, and then come back and tell me. So now for your information, let me tell you where it's at. It's in chapter 13. You know, it's title. Here in the United States, we have a set of books here, about 100 of them. I'm looking at them here on my wall. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 shelves is what it takes, and the shelves are about 3 feet long. 13 three-foot shelves to hold the entire United States Code. Well, in Title 13, Section 221, and that's for you census workers out there, write it down. Now you'll know. So when you go out there to intimidate people, you can tell them where the law is. In Section 221, it says that Congress is writing up this law here in pursuance of the constitutional requirement to take a census every 10 years for the purpose of apportioning representatives for government. Now, the census today, when you look at their form, goes way, way beyond taking a census for the apportionment of representatives. They want to know how many bathrooms you got and what kind of car you drive and how much mileage you get, how much gasoline you burn, how many bedrooms you have in your house, how many toilets you got. Which doesn't have anything to do with the Constitution or anything to do with apportioning representatives in the Congress. But anyway, there's an exception to that. You know, for us religious people over here that actually practice and follow the Scripture, it's in 225D. 225D. So if you happen to be a religious objector and you know you want to follow the Scripture, Congress said, well, okay, all of you Catholics, Protestants, and Jews out there, you violate the law of God, and you follow our law, and you participate in this census. And then for you religious objectors out there who actually practice the law of God, for the 10 or 15 of you that might be out there, you right-wing lunatic fringe, we'll exempt you. So, hell, I'm exempted, and so I tell them, no, I'm not going to participate in the census. Anyway, one of them said that he was going to report me and I would be arrested and prosecuted and probably jailed. That was in the 1980 census. And I told him, I said, okay. He left. They didn't prosecute me, and they didn't jail me, and so on. So I wanted to point that out. Now I'm not trying to be obnoxious and trying to be a criminal here. The trick to this is that we obey all the laws of the United States pursuant to Romans 13. And we obey all the laws of the state of Missouri. And then we obey all the laws of God. But the laws of God come first. So let me show you how this one works. You go over here to Acts 5, verse 29. Write this one down here. Acts 5, verse 29. And Peter, acting under inspiration from God. Here's an instruction from Jesus. You want to know what Jesus told you to do? Watch this. Jesus said in Acts 5:29, Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. So when the census lady comes out and she says, now I'm here to take the census. I don't think that we should be rude and obnoxious and take that census and stick it where there's no daylight. I point out to him, I'm a religious objector and we don't participate in the census. We're Hebrews and we practice Hebrew law. And then they kind of get huffy and uppity, and I'm not really quite sure why census takers do that. What the hell difference does it make to you what my religious beliefs are? How does that impact upon you? And furthermore, we Hebrews, we don't take any benefits from the government. We don't sign up for Social Security. We don't take aid to families with dependent children. We don't take welfare and food stamps. We're not a burden on any of you people out there. You taxpayers in the United States, you're not paying my Social Security check. I paid into Social Security for many years, never took a dime from it. So what's your complaint? I'm the guy that's stupid. I'm the guy that's a nutcase, a fruitcake. But anyway, for some reason, they get really upset and excited about that, and they want to turn me into the police and have me locked up in jail and really, really get after me, you know? All right, so let's get back here to reality. The reality of it is that when the state requires of you that you violate the law of God, and sometimes they'll threaten you. Now, with fat, they don't. They induce you. They entice you. They say, well, come in here. You owe it to yourself today to have a Big Mac. And then wash it down with a Coke so you can give yourself diabetes along with cardiovascular disease. So that if the atherosclerosis doesn't kill you, the diabetes will. And so people go in and they eat. It tastes good. I'm not complaining about McDonald's. You know, if God made anything better than a Big Mac, he kept it for himself. But the moral to the story is that it's 30% fat, which we were told not to eat. And now we know that fat plugs up your arteries and gives you obesity, in addition to dying from cardiovascular disease. Now, Jesus asked the Pharisees, said, well, how come you violate the laws of God? So I'm just asking the same thing of you. Why do you call Jesus Lord, Lord, and then eat fat at McDonald's, buy an insurance policy, and then give the numbers to the census taker? See where we're going with this? Well, it's because that's what all the rest of the Catholics, Protestants, and Jews do. And I'm not denying that. But why don't we stop doing that? And is there a penalty for doing that? So write this down so you can see what the penalties are. When you get over here to Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, that's two whole chapters. And that's going to take some reading. Probably take you an hour to read those two chapters. Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. God comes along and says, now listen, here's what I want you to do, and if you don't do this, here's what I'm going to do to you. There's going to be some punishment here. Yeah, let me cover one more little item over here. I wrote down three of them. It's called cuttings and markings in your flesh. Have you noticed how many women have tattoos? I was absolutely amazed. Now, when I was a kid, I don't think I ever saw a woman outside of a carnival with a tattoo. Now, they used to have the tattooed lady in the carnival, and I used to think that was quite a sight. This all the carnivals had a woman, you know, with tattoos on her. Now, a man with a tattoo, a sailor with a tattoo, some service guy, you know, from the Air Force or the Army that had a tattoo, was pretty common after World War II. I don't remember any of the Gordon Stanleys or Snyders that had them. None of the family members that I was associated with had tattoos that I can recall. But there were men all over the place that had tattoos. It wasn't common. I would imagine maybe 10% of the male population had a tattoo. And they always had it on their arm or someplace where you could not see it. Oh, my God. I was down at Tim and Jim's the other day, and they got a lady down there. A good-looking woman, too. I mean, she's not a snaggletooth skag, you know. She's not some ugly mud fence that you're looking at. Good-looking woman. And she's got tattoos on her arms, on her legs, on her neck. I mean, you can't cover those up. Not that she's trying to. I mean, she's running around there half-naked so she can show them off. I guess with the kind of money that you're spending for these tattoos, I suppose you would want to show them off. Now, a woman that did look pretty good now looks pretty poor, at least in my view. Probably to another tattooed guy, maybe two tattooed people look real good to one another. I don't know. I noticed that two manatees, I mean, if God made anything uglier than a manatee, he kept it hidden. And thank God for that. But anyway, these manatees are pretty ugly, but they breed and reproduce. And I suppose that two manatees probably look pretty good to one another, but I thought they were pretty ugly. So maybe two tattooed people look pretty good to one another, but I didn't think it looked too good. But here is the moral to the story. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but did you know in the Bible it tells you not to do that? It's in Leviticus 19:28. It says, "You shall make no cuttings in your flesh, nor print any marks upon you." I suppose that's one of the least commandments. Now, I don't know where the preachers are on this subject, but when I was a kid, people used to say, "Don't get a tattoo. Don't get a tattoo. Don't you do that." And I never knew why. Nobody ever said to me, "Because God told you not to do that." I can't ever remember anybody informing me of that. But I just happened to be reading in the scripture over here, and I noticed that it said don't do that. There's a couple others in here. Listen to this. "You shall not make baldness upon your head." Hey, you remember Yul Brynner and Telly Savalas? Remember they used to shave their head? Well, doesn't that tell you pretty plainly, don't make any baldness upon your head? You probably have plenty to go around. I mean, I'm kind of in that boat, you know. I've got plenty of baldness on my head. I don't need to shave it to show it off. Now, I notice that bald heads are pretty common. I don't see it so much among women. Can't remember any of those. But I see quite a few bald-headed men. They just shave it bald. Now, you were told not to do that. So, in case you were wondering, I just thought I'd bring it to your head. "Neither shall you shave off the corner of your beard." Now, I notice that people run around with mustaches, and they run around with all kinds of, I was watching TV the other night, and there's quite a few ball players, and it's pretty common among ball players. They've got some whiskers on their chin, and they kind of cut around here and there, you know, so that they can make various designs on their faces, you know, with their beards. Now, you're told not to do that. If you're going to grow a beard, grow it, and if you're going to shave, shave it. But don't make these shaving off or the cuttings on the corner of your beard. And then it says not to cut yourselves, nor make any baldness between your eyes. He says you're a holy people unto the Eternal your God, and the Eternal has chosen you to be a peculiar people unto himself, above all the nations that are upon the earth. He wanted us to be a peculiar people, you know, people that don't have tattoos, people that don't have bald heads, and people that obey God and keep His commandments, practice circumcision, so on. So anyway, I'm pointing this out because the people that are knocking on my doors are the hypocrites that don't do these statutes, even these least commandments. Even the least one. You'd think, you know, somebody come along and say, well, you know, I'm going to go out and practice adultery because that feels real good, but I'm not going to shave my beard, and I'm not going to get a tattoo, and I'm not going to shave my head. You'd think that people would do these little commandments down here, the least commandments, and, you know, kind of shade off, you know, those commandments that we don't agree with and don't like to practice, like theft. You know, that theft now is real good. It's very profitable. But, you know, there's a law that says thou shalt not steal. And it's got some heavy-duty penalties to it. So I just thought I'd point this out to you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We're looking here at one more. I'll come back with education when I give you this reminder right after this. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go directly to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. And then finally, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, with that out of the way, now we can go back over here and take a look at some more of these stories here in the Bible and asking questions, you know, like, how come we don't do this? Now, here in the United States, we have a lot of religious people. This is a pretty religious country. To give you an illustration, 65% of Americans go to church every Sunday. That's a big percentage. Only 13% of Europeans go to church every Sunday. And Europeans are mainly Catholics. And you'd think that, you know, Catholics being religious people, you know, would all want to go to church every Sunday, but they don't. 13% do. But here in the United States, I guess it's because we're mainly Protestant. I can't speak for the Catholics here in this country, but I guess that the people here, and I live down in the Bible Belt, and I'll tell you, they all go to church down here. And I was down in Eureka Springs the other day, you know, and the wife and I were out on the road, and we were, you know, tripping around a little bit, and my wife likes to go into antique stores and one thing and another. We went through Berryville, Arkansas, on our way over to Bartlesville, Oklahoma. We were out on the road traveling, And we're stopping here and stopping there, and so my wife said, I would like to go back to Berryville. And we were on our way back here to the farm, and it was on a Sunday, so we stopped and had lunch at Berryville. KFC's open, Walmart's open. And so I drove to downtown Berryville, where they have probably 10 antique stores. And we parked, and we got out, and we went out, and everything in Berryville is closed. I mean, it is locked up tighter than a beer barrel in a church basement. I mean, you couldn't get in anywhere. So I noted that. I take these little notations down, and I said, okay, Berryville, Arkansas, in the heart of the Bible Belt's locked up tight on Sundays. And I suppose they're all looking out there, you know, out their windows and saying, what's that crazy fool doing out there on the Sabbath day trying to buy and sell, you know? Well, okay, I'm not arguing with you people down there. I just want to point out that we're a religious people here in this country, and 65% of us go to church, and we're real religious. But we follow the traditions of men, the traditions of our churches, and we don't follow the commandments of God. And I'm just kind of a lay guy over here, you know, plumber, carpenter, general contractor, just one of the average Joe Sixpacks over here, not particularly religious, not trying to get you to give your heart to Jesus, nothing over here today, but every once in a while I can't help pull this apart and say, hey, wait a minute, how come we're not doing this? Now, there's a penalty for the violation of these laws. This is one of the things we teach here in law school. If you violate a law, then you should be prepared to pay the penalty for it. And so, as I mentioned, I won't participate in the census, but here in our secular law, we have a First Amendment that operates here in the United States, which protects us against government intrusion into our truly and sincerely held religious beliefs. And that form, type of law, that type of administration of law is called Anglo-Saxon administration. And everywhere the Anglo-Saxons have gone since we got this from Moses, we have been practicing this. So you people in England, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, Iceland, Greenland, Denmark, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. You know, I'd even go so far as to say, I'll bet you people in India and Pakistan and Bangladesh can practice Anglo-Saxon administration, because unless you have repealed it in your countries, I'll bet you're still following and still practicing Anglo-Saxon administration where the British Empire, you know, set its flag and taught you their laws. Now, you should have a form of religious free exercise and an ability in your country to obey God rather than men, so that when the census taker comes out and says it's against the law and we're going to prosecute you, you come back and say, well, I'm a religious objector and I don't do census. Or I'm a religious objector and I don't kill people, so leave me out of the army. We call these conscientious objectors. Then the military people, they call those chickens. Okay. Well, nevertheless, there's a provision in our law in an Anglo-Saxon administration where you can actually obey God rather than men. In fact, our Congress even wrote that up. It's in Public Law 97-280. It's Public Statute 96-12-11. And they said, hey, we ought to study and apply the teachings of the Scripture. Now, this is our Congress. Our Congress said this. We ought to study and apply the teachings of the Bible. Isn't that crazy? And then our Supreme Court here in the United States, there was a case called Seeger versus U.S. It was a conscientious objector case back in 1963. And the Congress said that we ought to study and apply the teachings of the Scripture, and the Supreme Court said that we can do that, and we're gonna butt out and leave you guys alone. That government is prohibited from interfering in our religious practices and beliefs. That's a Seeger versus United States. In fact, they gave us a 10-part test, 5 winning and 5 losing positions on a religious free exercise. So if you are concerned about that in any way, if you will look up this case, it's called United States versus Seeger, and I think it's 1963. I forgot the exact case number. You call me here at the law school and ask me, and I'll go look it up for you and tell you. And that's so that people like us, you know, can practice the law of God. Now, the other day, give you a little insight here. The other day here in the United States, we just enacted socialized medicine like the rest of you people in the world. I think we're about the last holdouts. And we have rejected socialized medicine here in the United States for many, many years, while the rest of you people, you know, in England and Canada and Australia, all adopted the communist program, but we resisted it. Well, our new president, Barack Obama, gave us socialized medicine here. Now, we have had socialized medicine in a little different form. You could take it or leave it. But now we've got the new socialized medicine, and it's, we're going to stick it up your hiney sideways. I mean, it's compulsory. And they're going to fine us and put us in, I don't know if they're going to put us in jail. Now, I might be going too far if I said they're going to put us in jail, but they got fines. Pretty hefty fines for people that don't participate in the, you know, if you don't voluntarily participate in the National Health Care Insurance Program, no, they're gonna stick it to you. Now, I'm not going to participate in it. On page 18 of the Act, right up front, 2,300 or 2,700 pages of legislation. I mean, that's more than I'd have to take my shoes off to count that high. But it's over 2,000 pages of legislation. But right up front on page 18, right up front of the Act, it exempts religious objectors. Did you know that? All right, that fits right in with me. So I'm not going to participate. And I've been exempted, just like I was exempted from the census. And so for us, that those of us that want to actually practice these laws of God, just in case you thought that it was tough or hard to do it, it really isn't. It really isn't. Once you find out what these laws are, most of them, the government doesn't have a criminal penalty against anyone. Let's try this one. God says, don't eat fat. Government says, we want you to eat lots of fat, and we're going to put 30% of it in your hamburger. But you see, they don't have a law that requires you to buy the hamburger, so you can avoid that. That way there's no confrontation. All right. Now, in addition to that, they come along and they say, okay, now you gotta participate in the census, but they've got an exemption written into the law. You just need to know what that exemption is and where it's located. And then vaccination. See, we don't practice vaccinations either, and our children, well, we don't send our children to public school anyway, but even if we did, we can be exempted from the vaccination requirement. Based upon the First Amendment. And there's just two really tough states to do that in. It's Mississippi and West Virginia. You got to get a court order. You got to get a declaratory judgment. Now, that takes a little more effort, but all the other states, the other 48 states in the Union, they have three forms or three means that you can use to avoid vaccinations if you're a conscientious objector or you're opposed to vaccines. Which not very many people are. I mean, there's only a handful of us out here that are concerned about it one way or the other. But, you know, in case you're one of them, you know, there's a way to do that. And I'll just bet you could do it in Canada, too. I was talking to a guy last night from Canada. He's got a little problem up there with the legal authorities. And we were chit-chatting a little bit. And then I pointed out to him that what's causing most of his problem is that he's in violation of the law of God. And as you violate more and more of these laws here in the Scripture, it puts you into greater and greater conflict with and brings you under the penal clause, or it brings you under the power of the state. So the less you have to do with these foreign and alien gods, I mean, the less of the law of Canada. We talked about this a little earlier. Let me flip back here again to Leviticus 18. Let me show you this again. Where God tells us, practice my statutes. Let me show you this. Leviticus 18, verses 1 through 5, he says, You shall do my judgments and keep my ordinance to walk therein. I am the Eternal your God. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live in them, because I am the Eternal. Now remember what he told us not to do. He says, after the doings of the land of Canada, the United States, and Australia, wherein you dwelt, shall you not do. And after the doings of the land of Great Britain, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, whither I bring you, shall you not do, and neither shall you walk in their ordinances. Do not practice the law of the state. You practice my law. That's not what the churches teach. They teach you, no, you practice the law of the state, and God can go take a hike. Well, okay, you can follow the preacher, or you can follow the Messiah, one or the other. But you're getting conflicting instructions here. Now, most of these guys, they will cite Romans 13:1. Let me flip over here to Romans 13, verse 1, and I'll show you. There's really no conflict here, but they create a conflict. That's what they're doing here. Here's Acts. Here's Romans. Here's Romans 10. Romans 13, verse 1. Good advice. There's no problem here with this law. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, because there's no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Queen Elizabeth sits in that chair because she was ordained to sit there. So I don't have any problems with Queen Elizabeth or President Barack Obama. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Will you then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and you shall have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to you for good. But if you do that which is evil, be afraid, because he bears not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. For this cause pay we tribute also. This is why we pay taxes. For they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Now your preacher, he be quick to tell you, follow Romans 13. That's good law. I'm not arguing with that. But now what are you going to do when the state comes along and says, but I want you to eat fat at McDonald's, I want you to participate in the census, and I want you to vaccinate your child. All right, so let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Write this one down. This is 1 Samuel chapter 8. This is where we got uppity with God one day. This is your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy got a little uppity. And he said to Samuel, who was the chief judge at that time, he says, we want a king like all the nations around us. And God said, that's a mistake. You guys have got your heads up the wrong end. You're suffering from the terminal stupids here. He said, go back and rethink that one. You've got me. I'm God. I'm the creator. I'm giving you pretty good law here. You want to stick with me? And he said, no. Nevertheless, we're going to have a king. So he said, okay. So we went out and we got a king. Now, God gave us some warnings. Now, this is the story he told us. He says, this king is going to tax you. And he's going to oppress you, and he's going to take your property away from you. He's going to raise hell with you. And in that day, he said, you're going to cry out to me in that day because of this king that you've elected, this Barack Obama. He says, I will not hear you. So I tell my students in here, I said, you can pray until hell freezes over. God's already told you. He said, no, I'm not going to hear it. So you can save your breath. You don't need to pray to Jesus now and ask him to save you from Barack Obama, because he ain't going to do it. You made your bed, now go sleep in it. Now, Barack Obama, Queen Elizabeth, and the public officials over here are actually a protection for us. They protect us against murderers and rapists and robbers and pillagers. They do not do a very good job about protecting us from Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, or Bank of America. In fact, they license these institutions to practice usury and interest, but they don't compel you to do it. They just entice or induce you to do it, and then when you practice usury and interest, you can't make your payments, and so they take your house away from you. That's the punishment. That's the penalty that you pay. And every time you violate a law of God, there will be a penalty for you to pay. And that's just the way life is. It's a natural penalty. Cause and effect is what comes into play. Now, when the law says drive 55, then you should slow down and drive 55. When the law says buckle your seatbelt, you should buckle your seatbelt. In those cases where the law requires you to obey the law of the state and it does not violate the law of the scripture, you should do that. I don't have any problem obeying the laws of the United States or Missouri. It's just when they require me to violate one of these laws of God. And then what did God tell us in Acts 5:29? He said, you ought to obey God rather than men. What did Jesus say to the Pharisees? He said, you're a bunch of hypocrites. You're over here practicing the traditions of your elders and fathers and churches and secular governments, and you are teaching against the Ten Commandments. He said, don't do that. There's nothing in conflict between Leviticus 18, Acts 5:29, and Romans 13:1 through 6. No conflict at all. The deception comes from your preacher who teaches you one-third of this program. He teaches you Romans 13, and then he omits Leviticus 18, verses 1 through 5. He omits, he fails to tell you about 1 Samuel chapter 8. He doesn't tell you anything about Acts 5:29. And he doesn't inform you as to the penalties that you're going to accrue if you violate the laws of God, and the penalties that are described for you in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus chapter 26. See where we're going with this? Then they go to church. Then they come out of church and they go knock on your door. And they want you to follow after their pernicious ways, after their traditions, which we were told don't do that. So the religious people that go out here and they practice insurance and limited liability, which we were told not to do. They practice the census. We were told not to do that. Send their kids to public school. They were told not to do that. Now, there's one thing that you can say. They don't advocate making cuttings and markings on your body and getting tattoos. I haven't seen any religious guys running around telling me I ought to get a tattoo. But I don't hear them teaching us that we ought not to either, because I'm an old man now, and I never had any preacher ever tell me not to get a tattoo. Not to get my lips pierced or my ears pierced or my eyebrows pierced. Have you seen, or my nose run through with a bone? Have you seen all these people running around with all this brass through all these holes in their eyebrows and nose and ears and lips and so on? Hey, can't you see that we were told not to do that? So I just thought I'd bring that to your attention, point that up. All right, and if you're a religious person over here, stick around. We won't crucify you forever and put you on the hot seat here forever. Just two more programs. Hey, we've got to remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and editorial review that were sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults. That's on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And then the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. And we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.